Carl?
Hi.
Hi, Carol. Is that your name?
It's actually Carla.
Carla,
I know
hi.
You're running out of time, but I wanted to just share with you some things that have been happening. It's really an important time now for everyone in higher ed to lean into organizing as much as possible. On September 8th at Willamette University, where I work, the student organizations that were tabling for new students found out that Turning Point USA was on campus.
Oh.
And this was disclosed by students in my class while we were studying gender studies.
Okay.
And 2 days later, there was the shooting. And the administration at Willamette is pretty much worthless. They're not doing things to protect students at all. They've come out and said to students, we cannot guarantee your safety on our campus. We're across the street from the state legislature, and last week, 3 Democratic legislators received bomb threats.
Yes, I know.
So people really need to lean in right now to the people that are trying to maintain some level of critical thought and democracy at our institutions of higher education. And I just hope this topic is raised more often outside of Portland State.
I have to say thank you, Carla. Carla, I have to say thank you. Ty is saying we need to leave. Ty, thank you. Carla, thank you. Thank you to all the listeners. I hope you have a fabulous day. Carla, I really, really appreciate you calling in.
Radio's greatest application is in broadcasting mass entertainment. Probably one of the best ways to get started is to make it a hobby and build an amateur station. It will show you more quickly than anything else whether or not you can succeed in radio.
KBOO, Portland.
Cable Community Radio's annual meeting and board election will be held on Saturday, September 20th at 11:30 a.m. at Mississippi Studios in North Portland. At the annual meeting, members will have the opportunity to meet candidates running in the board election. Final votes will be cast and counted. The results of the elections will be announced at the end of the meeting. Online voting is open now through the annual meeting at kabo.fm/board25. Paper ballots will be sent to members by mail. Again, that's KBO's annual meeting and board election on Saturday, September 20th at 11:30 a.m. at Mississippi Studios, located at 3939 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kabo.fm/board25.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from the People's Urban Art Fest, empowering historically underrepresented arts with a focus on social justice. This event is on September 21st at Riverfront Park in Salem and will feature live music, local artists, vendors, and community resources. More info on Facebook at LUS Salem and Instagram at LUS Youth.
Welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a global audience, produced at a different location every week. I'm Cheryl Beversdorf, producer and host of Aging Matters, a program produced in Arlington, Virginia, and featuring timely aging topics for older adults and their families. Today on Sprouts, we hear about Meals on Wheels, a program that specializes in addressing the unique needs of America's most vulnerable and high-risk older adult and disabled populations. At the core of the Meals on Wheels service is a nutritious meal, companionship, and a watchful eye on health and safety. My guests today are Carter Florence, Vice President of Programs at Meals on Wheels America, and Mary Tugwell, President of Meals on Wheels of Arlington, Virginia. They're both going to tell us about Meals on Wheels services and how the organization promotes health and social connection for older adult clients. They'll also explain how older adults can enroll in the program and how volunteers can sign up to deliver meals. So welcome, Carter and Mary, and thanks for joining me today.
Morning.
Morning. Thanks for having us.
Carter, let's get an overview about Meals on Wheels. We need a little history about this organization. We know it's been around for a while, so give us more details about when Meals on Wheels was established, why, what its vision and mission are, any other information that you want to provide.
Absolutely, Cheryl. This is one of my favorite things to do, talk a little bit about Meals on Wheels and especially how it shows up in communities across the country. So Meals on Wheels was established here in the U.S. in Philadelphia in 1954. And the most beautiful thing to me about Meals on Wheels is that it's a truly grassroots, local, community-driven effort. It popped up in Philadelphia and kind of spread like wildfire throughout the nation. And it really was initially started as a compassionate idea around that shared vision of ensuring that older adults can age in place with dignity and independence, and has grown into one of the largest and most effective social movements in America. So we're currently serving more than 2 million seniors annually in virtually every community in the U.S. And each of those communities, Meals on Wheels, is reflective of that local community. So Mary and I'll talk a little bit about this, but what happens in Arlington may not look and feel the same as in Tacoma, Washington. And that's a really lovely and wonderful thing. Meals on Wheels America, the organization that I work for, we were actually founded much later in 1974. Following the addition of senior nutrition programs to the Older Americans Act, which is a federal legislation that supports senior nutrition programs. So it was a convening in DC and this commitment and idea that a leadership organization that could support this local grassroots network was really important. And so we have a shared vision with our local programs really around ensuring that older adults are able to age with independence and dignity and live nourished lives.
These programs are located throughout the country, and there might be some variation in terms of the services that are provided by these different programs?
Both that and both kind of how those services show up. So again, what's delivered through Meals on Wheels is consistent, and the impact of Meals on Wheels is shared, but the how it shows up is going to be of and by the community.
What might the issues be that would warrant an older adult getting assistance from the Meals on Wheels? Perhaps their physical situation, maybe also their social, economic. What do we need to know in terms of eligibility for Meals on Wheels services?
So older adults who qualify for Meals on Wheels assistance often are facing a combination of physical, social, and economic challenges that may make it difficult for them to meet their nutritional needs. So this may look like the inability to cook for themselves. That's one of the main eligibility criteria that many programs will be registering. There's also a provision within the Older Americans Act to support caregivers of individuals who are also receiving. So there are a couple different ways that you can kind of enter into services. Sometimes in certain programs, that may actually look like a referral from a physician or someone else in the community. But for the most part, you can connect with a local program, determine their individual eligibility. Typically, it's 60 or 65 plus. Some of it will depend upon the different funding streams that are available at the local organization and how they can actually access those services. And I know, Cheryl, we had mentioned earlier that the impact is the same, but the services may look a little bit different in terms of services above and beyond meal delivery, especially around social connection services. And that could look like a friendly visiting call or a friendly calling program, or even pet food assistance is a very commonly delivered ancillary program for Meals on Wheels.
And do recipients of Meals on Wheels have to be at or below a particular economic level?
So that will actually depend at the local level as well. Again, the largest federal funding, Older Americans Act, is actually based on the inability to cook or perform certain activities of daily living. So it is not an economic based, but more of a ability based.
I wanted to touch on a couple other aspects in terms of geographics. First of all, insofar as the mobility of our population today, you know, the older adult children might have moved, and this may be a factor.
does one have to be living in a particular vicinity in terms of being eligible for the program in that area?
Geography here in the U.S. is quite interesting. I'm originally from Appalachia, so the mountains are always home to me and an important component, even when you think about how one delivers across the mountain. So we are seeing, absolutely, Cheryl, migration of families, folks moving away. We do see many adult children who may not live close by seeking out services in a local community for their parents who live in that area. So that is one thing that we often hear from our local providers, that they're actually maybe more in contact with somebody in Florida who's a child of the older adult that they're delivering to in Vermont. So that is something that happens. People helping to get services to individuals in the communities where they are. In terms of how the programs themselves serve, typically programs will have kind of a service area. It may be a neighborhood. It may also be multiple counties. And in some cases, like Rhode Island, it could be the whole state, where one program is really supporting that whole delivery. So that geographic location is important. We actually have a Find Meals component on our website, where you can go on www.mealsonwheelsamerica.org/findmeals. You can enter your zip code, and it will produce a list of programs who serve that zip code or near that zip code, so that you could really find those local services. And then again, once you go to that individual program, you can see what all they have available, and how the eligibility criteria works and adjusts, and can even oftentimes submit referrals or requests right there online.
Mary, let's talk with you a little bit. You represent a local Meals on Wheels organization in Arlington, Virginia. What have you seen in terms of the relationship between Meals on Wheels services and the health status of the older adults that you serve?
Oh, it's significant. Meals on Wheels America has promoted research that shows that loneliness and isolation can be as detrimental as smoking a pack of cigarettes a day. And the NIH has research that shows that older adults who maintain a healthy diet have significantly less risk of issues like depression, osteoporosis, high blood pressure, heart disease, cancers, and dementia.
In the research that you have read about and Carter has shared, and even your observations, overall, it seems like good nutrition is really important for this population, and that there can be a lot of health risks related to hunger and isolation. Do you agree?
Absolutely. We do an annual survey with our clients, or Arlington County does. And one of our clients responded, "I live alone and I used to eat just junk. So now that I get Meals on Wheels, I'm eating much more healthy food."
I'd love to actually pop in there and add to Mary's comment, because I think one of the things that we may not realize is how our nutrition needs change over time. And as we age, what you need in your 80s is not what you need in your 20s nutritionally. And Meals on Wheels programs know how to do that. And I think that's a really important part when we talk about the health needs as well, is that, you know, older adults may need fewer calories, but more nutrients like protein, fiber, and vitamins. And so that nutrition isn't always easy, but Meals on Wheels can deliver it.
When you do a meal delivery, do you stay a while? How does this delivery activity enhance the social connection and help to fight loneliness for these older adults?
It really depends on the client. Some clients are very chatty and they invite you in, ask you to help them put away the food. I have a client who likes to philosophize about the evils of envy and the benefits of eating chocolate in the winter versus the summer. And he is just delightful. And I can count on spending a good 15 minutes at his door. Our drivers really do connect with their clients. They see the same clients every week, and they come to feel connected and responsible for those clients. And it's a really wonderful thing for the clients and for our drivers. We did have a driver who went to a client's house and knocked on the door and could hear that the client was in there, but they were having trouble getting to the door and they started to become distressed. So the driver talked to the client and at the same time called 911, and EMTs showed up and were able to get into the client's apartment and take them to the hospital.
Might that be a common occurrence that during a Meals on Wheels delivery, there might be a notation from the person who's delivering the meals or the driver, and not only a medical emergency, as you just described in terms of 911, but even maybe things a little off, that perhaps if they've seen someone for a while and everything seemed to be going well, and then suddenly maybe the house is a little bit messier or the behavior is different than they've seen in the past. If this is the case, is there some kind of follow-up that occurs, or how does that handle?
So as our volunteers complete their deliveries, we have a central dispatcher who will take their input on the client's health. And if there are any issues, they'll record that, and that will get communicated to the caseworker at the county who is in charge of that client. And they may send somebody for a well check or contact the client's family or try to connect to other services the county has related to home repairs or hoarding issues or whatnot. We did have a volunteer who was delivering to a regular client and noticed a strong smell of gas at the apartment. And the volunteer got the client and the client's pet out of the apartment and called 911, and the firefighters came and resolved the issue. And luckily, nobody got hurt. But it was thanks to volunteer being there and being, you know, ready to respond that was an essential part of maintaining that client's health.
You're listening to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of global interest. I'm Cheryl Beversdorf, producer and host of Aging Matters in Arlington, Virginia. And today we're talking about Meals on Wheels, a program that features a nutritious meal, companionship, and a watchful eye on health and safety for America's most vulnerable and high-risk older adult and disabled populations.
There is an ongoing partnership between Meals on Wheels and other community organizations that can handle those kinds of issues, a gas leak or maybe a possibility of elder abuse or something like that. Is that correct, Mary?
Absolutely. There are several organizations in our county that we are starting to partner with more and more that help seniors with repairs, with rides to the doctor, with other health issues, with safety issues. And it's really a wonderful community that's in place to support these seniors who are living alone.
And Carter, perhaps you can expand on what Mary is saying as to situations in other organizations around the country. Is part of the training that individuals get, not only delivering the meals, but say assessing the home environment where the older adults live, and are there certain safety hazards, such as what Mary described, or some other physical aspects that they are trained to look for when they deliver these meals?
So I do think that as Meals on Wheels services get undertaken, oftentimes it does begin with a home assessment that isn't necessarily done by a volunteer. It's typically done by a staff member or someone at a partner agency who's making the referral. But that really is the assessment of what all supports could help this older adult to stay in their home, and what resources Meals on Wheels or otherwise could come to bear. And that formal assessment may be repeated in some cases as often as quarterly, or if, as Mary said, like if there was an event that kind of warranted another check. But the volunteers or the folks delivering, sometimes they are paid staff because volunteers are hard to come by. They really are trained to do that informal assessment at a regular basis. In some cases, they actually have technology that's enabled to help them document that on the route, and that could even be taken care of in real time. So that's actually something that Meals on Wheels America helped to support, was the development of a change of condition monitoring that was technologically enabled, that looked at kind of the common domains that we see, whether that would be physical or mental, and really be able to make those connections and make the referrals to either the other department or other service providers in community. That also really helps us to kind of ensure that we're observing those potential threats or risks to the client's safety, and or that established protocol to ensure that they are accounted for in a timely manner. Those will vary a little bit by the program, and they may also vary by what other resources are actually available in communities to be able to resolve it. Unfortunately, some things can't be addressed with other community-based organizations. But we really see this partnership in the community is so critical for Meals on Wheels programs. I'm always a bit amazed and awed when I talk with our local providers, just how well connected they are in their communities. They know the sheriff's department, they know the firefighters, they know the local area agency on aging or state unit on aging. They know the hospitals, they know the nursing homes, the doctors. They really know the folks in community who are supporting these older adults, and often may even be a little bit better informed than some others because of that personal connection that's happening at the individual level. So it's really just an incredible opportunity for these partnerships, and the safety hazards that can be resolved really are critical and very important to helping older adults to stay in their home.
And these safety hazards, so that is part of the training?
Yeah, to my knowledge, most volunteers are trained at least with like call 911, you know, these are the things that you can do, you can't do in terms of that, both for the safety of the client and the volunteer or staff delivering as well.
Say there is some health observation that is made by these individuals who are delivering the meals. Is there a concern about, say, privacy and sharing that information? Is there also perhaps a follow-up with a family member, especially if the person lives by himself or herself and the family member is not in the area? Is that part of the process? And is there a concern about the privacy when we're talking about health conditions?
There is typically an emergency contact on file for any older adult that is receiving services. As Mary mentioned, if 911 is called, that emergency contact would also be contacted to ensure that is happening. The autonomy of the older adult clients themselves and their ability to make their own decisions and choices is something that is respected. So if it is mentioned that we do not want anything to happen here, we will respect that. Mary, anything else to add or different in your organization?
So as part of the volunteer sign-up process, they are required to sign a form committing to maintaining the privacy of the clients, to not share names, addresses, conditions, anything that the client, you know, would want to maintain privacy for.
And I was wondering, too, if the involvement of the family, because there's so much in terms of family dynamics in this activity that you do in terms of delivering meals and checking in on them, does the family have a say as to how much intervention and other services can be provided to their loved one? And Mary, I'm looking at you here. What have you discovered in terms of some of your experiences?
We have found that the families are, you know, so grateful that someone is looking in on their loved one. That's mainly the concern. They're happy they're getting nutritious food, but as anyone who has had a parent out of town would know, just knowing that they're okay is the main thing that you're concerned about. Most families are just happy to sign up for the services, the basic services we provide in Arlington. there's really not a lot of choice. You know, we deliver 10 meals once a week, and that's what we offer. And if you're allergic to fish, we'll take the fish out. But that's about as specific as we can get. And I don't know of any family that has asked us to modify that or has refused service because they're not happy with what we're offering.
Several months ago, I did a Aging Matters program about elder abuse. And I was curious if that can also be a factor, that there are some negative things going on with somebody who has decided they wanted the Meals on Wheels services, but this is a case that is happening with a client. That can get a little dicey. Could you talk a little bit more if that's been an experience for Meals on Wheels volunteers who are coming to these homes? And if so, how is that handled?
So unfortunately, elder abuse is something that occurs in the U.S., and it is absolutely something that Meals on Wheels programs have had to and will continue to be a part of resolving. Typically, it is handled through social workers, and it is documented. I have heard through other programs of it being an issue. I've not seen it personally in my own deliveries when I've been out and about, but we do know that it is a challenge. And so we, as the national organization, try to provide resources from other experts who are able to provide kind of that guidance and technical assistance. Other institutions, National Council on Aging, I believe, has some good resources that we've promoted historically. So really, it takes a village. And so that's absolutely what we are doing, connecting with the best resources of how to resolve it and how to really support the older adults and connect them to the services that can really help to resolve that issue.
And as a national organization, Carter, is there an ongoing effort by Meals on Wheels to continue and enhance the partnerships with these other organizations so that more of the needs of these older adult clients are being met?
Absolutely. Last year, Meals on Wheels America actually launched a campaign or platform called In the Wait, which is really about raising awareness of the wait that older adults face, not just for Meals on Wheels services, but really for all the needs that they have to be able to support them to successfully and healthfully age. 1% of philanthropy supports older adults. Oftentimes, they are an afterthought in the federal legislation or other entities. So we know that Meals on Wheels is an effective solution to helping to support older adults stay in their communities. It's cost effective, but it's also not the only thing that is needed. So we want to continue to partner both nationally and locally to be able to bring the best services to older adults so that they can stay at home where they want to be. So that is absolutely a big part of our work. We bring national partners together, whether that's through advocacy and unified voice on Capitol Hill, whether that's lifting up local examples through our annual conference and learning opportunities of perhaps a unique partnership with a sheriff's office.
Because there are certainly a lot of rural areas in the United States, and I know that there are some radio stations that are picking up this program, is there a different approach if older adults are living in a rural area as opposed to an urban area?
One thing we have seen is that programs really modify their operations to meet the local needs. And sometimes that may look like having a hub and spoke model. So this is something you'll see in rural communities where the main Meals on Wheels program may be in kind of the urban location, but they maybe have senior centers in communities where they will go and store meals and deliver meals from there. They'll also have community dining on site in those places. You do also see adjustments where maybe multiple meals will be delivered at one time that are frozen and that they are then reheated. So they may not be delivering daily, although we see that in urban communities as well. So that may not be just a uniquely rural connection. We do also see in rural communities the distance being a real challenge, and often volunteers aren't able to commit to a 100-mile round-trip drive. So you may be seeing that, again, with a refrigerated vehicle that really can keep those food at temperature and a paid staff who is really able to make that distance happen on a more regular basis than a volunteer. But again, they've been trained and they absolutely connect with the clients and take care of the folks the exact same way.
I wanted to turn now to the more nitty-gritty, the housekeeping part that we need to know about. And so, Carter, I'm going to start with you. You mentioned a little bit already about the website, but tell us that again in terms of finding meals and services in a particular geographic area, but expand on that. What is the application process? Is there somebody there 24/7 that talks to you, or is it all online? When does the meal delivery begin? What do we need to know?
It really will be dependent on the local program. I think one thing that I always like to remind people or let people know is that many programs deliver Meals on Wheels without being called Meals on Wheels, or it may not be in their name. So it may be your senior center is actually where meals are delivered, or your Council on Aging, or senior services. They come in a lot of different names. So I think, again, when you're really looking to see who is delivering this service in your community, going to our website, mealsonwheelsamerica.org/findmeals, really is kind of one of the better ways, because you can enter your zip code and it will give you all the different service providers in the area that we know about. And so it has their contact information, and you can go on their individual websites and see.
That's it for Sprouts. This week, you have been listening to the first half of an Aging Matters program about Meals on Wheels, a program that provides a nutritious meal, companionship, and a watchful eye on health and safety for America's most vulnerable and high-risk older adult and disabled populations. The second half of the program will air next week on Sprouts. Special thanks to my guests, Carter Florence, Vice President of Programs at Meals on Wheels America, and Mary Tugwell, President of Meals on Wheels of Arlington, Virginia. The Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the globe. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to showcase nationally on Sprouts, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at Ursula